You're listening to the Drummers Education Connection Podcast. Interviews with the greatest drummers in the business and roundtable discussions with industry leaders and teachers from around the globe to help provide performance, insight, and inspiration.
What happened? What happened to the nested quintuplets?
Where's the quintuplets? What happened? What
they
happened?
Flew away.
There are 14. They flew away. Everybody, welcome to. What you did? What?
I played him so fast you didn't hear him.
Right. Oh, that's what it
that's
was.
That's what it was.
He did it with his feet. He did it with his feet.
Yes,
that's what he did.
He was ghosting them. You couldn't hear him.
Everybody, the show started off with a bang. Welcome to Drummers Education Connection. I am here with some amazing drummers and great friends of mine in the Bay Area, Jeremy Steinkohler down in San Diego. We've got Rick Stojak.
Welcome.
In Tucson, we've got Chip the Ritter, Splitter
Hello.
Ritter. And as our friend Stevie D said, not only one of the nicest guys in the world, one of the greatest A&R people, but a fantastic, fantastic drummer, Chris Brady from Aquarian Drumheads. Everybody knows Chris is the A&R guy for Aquarian, but he is an amazing drummer. As Stevie pointed out, Picaro, John Bonham, Phil Rudd, Peter Chris, he plays exactly like all of them. He's an amazing, amazing drummer, and we're very thankful to have him on
more
the
like,
show.
More like Peter Chris, but
more
in the Peter Chris spectrum. Then
I've got a picture of Chris and Peter Chris that I shared one time that I need to share again. Anyway, welcome to Drummers Education Connection, everybody. Thanks for tuning in today. We got a great show for you. We're talking about drum heads and endorsements. As usual, though, what we're going to do today is we're going to start off the show with our good things and also our Patreon thing. If you guys want to help keep the lights on, pay for our website, help us with all those types of things, you can support us at Patreon. Just go there. Chip is going to put a link down in the comments. You can click on that and help us keep the lights on. But good things is just kind of a thing where we share our good stuff that we got going on in our lives, whether it be drumming or personal stuff. And then we jump into the show. So today we're going to start off with Chip Ritter. Chip, what do you got going on that are good things, buddy? What's happening?
Man, I got a good thing. I got a student that I have that unfortunately has Williams syndrome, and he's a 16-year-old and he's in high school, and he was playing the bass drum and he wants to get on the snare. And I had such a struggle trying to get him to stay on the snare instead of over on the cowbell to the toms and everything else. And I had a breakthrough. I got a song going and I started getting him to follow me and play what I was playing. And so we had a kind of a breakthrough with him. And that's my good thing for the week.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome. Way to go. Rick, what about you, buddy? What good things you got going on?
My good thing is meeting Fred Fisher, the great drummer, drum teacher out in Boise, Idaho. I spent an hour on the phone yesterday with Fred sharing ideas, and it's just the product of DEC, because Fred met you, Bart, through your posts and through DEC, and Fred is teaching out of my books and having a lot of success with it. And man, that guy is a hell of a drummer. So
and he is a great drummer and a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yep.
Let's not go overboard. He's all right.
He's okay. He's okay. He's all right. He's no Jeremy Steinkohler, but you know, he's okay. Jeremy, what do you got going on that's good, buddy? What do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
Just teasing you, Fred. Good stuff. Evan, my son graduated from high school this past week. Really, really exciting. This coming weekend, I've got a show coming up called Songs for Our Fathers, where I'm playing with my son and also two other father and son duos of these amazing musicians. So we kind of threw together this thing to do an afternoon of music, that some original stuff, some roots and some jazz, kind of fatherhood themed stuff. So really excited about that.
That's very awesome. Cool.
And then album release is coming up the following weekend with the Erica Oba Trio. So two of those shows, really excited.
Cannot wait to hear that. Well, I got a couple things going on and this will kick us into the show. Heading out on the road Thursday. Chris, what do you got going on that's good? Chris, what
so is yesterday?
Yes.
A certain Bart Robley called me, and I happened to not see the call, and I missed it. And the good thing is that I avoided the whole conversation.
That might be one of the best good things we've ever had.
Is the best good thing in the history of Drummer's Education Connection. I got thumbed by Brady. Listen, okay, well, on that note.
Automatic apply on my
this is my good thing, you know, just because I got thrown under the bus by Chris. I went over there to Aquarian the other day, and I got a chance to the last week be playing on the new Aquarian balance pad that's designed by Aquarian and Mike Johnston, and it is a fantastic pad. I mean, this is one of the best practice pads that I've ever played on. It feels great. It's dual-sided, as you can tell. We've got like a really nice sponge rubber on this side and then a harder neoprene rubber on this side. Did a couple of videos about it. The material, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, is the same material that they use on the super pads, the Dura Dots, and the Power Dots. Great practice pad.
There's some other things going on in there.
Yeah. And
proprietary elements that I can't.
And if you buy it, if you buy a set of them, you can also play Othello.
There you go.
And then my personal daily success planner is doing really good with my drum students. So all my drum students are using this, finding ways to move forward. It's a good tool for my students and for other people. It's doing really good. If you're interested in that, you can check it out at Kindle Direct Publishing. And that's about it. So here we are. We're on Drummer's Education Connection with our good friend Chris Brady and fellow drummer, as we spoke about. Chris, what's happening at Aquarian? Let's talk about the new pad.
I do have to say there was one good thing.
Okay.
All you guys have great educational material and books. And Rick sent Mike and I a copy of his latest book. And we got a couple of hoodies from Rick. So that was a very nice thing that I'm grateful for.
Oh, that's fantastic, Chris.
You know, I always tell Rick, the one thing I dig about the book series is I don't really teach too much anymore, but I did back in the day. And then you'd always show drummers certain, you know, the intro, starter, simple beats, and you'd write them out. And then when it came time to reference a song, I would always draw a blank. Be like, yeah, here's rock beat number one. You can play it on a million different songs. If you learn this beat, you can really play. And then I'd go, yeah. And then I would just draw a blank, and I couldn't think of any song to go check out. And I love Rick's book because he's got all these examples that you can go, here they all are. And that's one aspect of the book that I really enjoy, is that it references songs and I don't have to draw a blank anymore.
Ah, Chris, that warms my heart hearing that. I appreciate that so much. There's almost.
Well, I'm going to get in some digs later, so don't get too comfortable. Okay.
Don't get cocky, kid.
Yeah. There's almost 400 songs referenced in each book that all have steady beats.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. That's a great element there. I literally would blank out. I'd be like, do-do-da, and then I think, oh, it's a million songs, and I can only probably name one. I enjoy that.
Right.
It does happen, man. It does happen. Well, Chris, I do have to ask. Came over there the other day. We talked about the new pad, the balance pad, and it really is. It's a great pad. This is new with Aquarian. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Talk about this and what else has happened with Aquarian. What kind of new stuff could we expect from you guys? Yeah. You know, coming down the pike.
That pad was a collaboration with Mike actually years ago, right before COVID. And then that whole thing went down. And then obviously everything kind of came to a grinding halt. And then I noticed he was still using the prototype. And I said, are you still using that thing? And he says, I love it. And so then we kind of redeveloped it because some of the materials that were used in that pad that would have been, 6 years ago now are no longer available to us. So we revamped some of the elements, and he's been using a set. We sent out 8 for his camps that are going on now just to get through a final testing phase. And he came up with the name Balance Pad because there's a, you know, for him, when he travels for his clinics and overseas things, he's in a hotel, which you guys know too. You're traveling in hotels frequently, and most pads are just a little too loud. So that softer side allows him to practice and not bother anybody. And also there's other benefits, like you noticed, you have to work a little harder. You may have to pull some of your strokes out, the beats out. You know, you can't just rely on the bounce completely to help you through it. And then the other side is a more articulate, harder side, so that you can actually, you know, hear things clearly and a rebound. And Mike has another reason. So there's the balance side, the soft side, the hard side. And also because he's very much into the filming and the camera and the technology behind all that stuff. He's very up on all that. He likes the pad because I don't know that much about all this, but he says it helps him to white balance his camera, the white side. So another tie into the balance pad.
That's very cool.
Mike Johnson has an incredible podcast, Mike and Eddie. And
that's the guy for the drummer from England, I think, right?
Eddie? Yeah, an English guy, yep. And they have an incredible podcast, and Mike is always talking about technology tips.
He's really into the cameras and knowing what each one does, and and its strengths and weaknesses, and what's the cool thing to have to get, you know, for the money to get your best output. And it's pretty neat.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Like the super pad, is that the soft surface, kind of foamy like
it's
that?
Similar, not quite. It's not quite the same.
Okay.
Now I don't know if you were joking a lot when you said there's some proprietary stuff. I'm assuming there is. Can you talk a little bit about like the hard side versus a soft side and what the material is? You can't. That's the proprietary stuff.
Maybe because I don't actually know myself.
You don't know. You just
or I'm not able to really speak about it. I'll leave that up to the viewer.
Okay. Well, it looks like a big Oreo. How about that? If you hold it right here,
look at that. Yeah, I love it.
I got a question for you. So every so often, you guys come out with some new product, and I am thinking like everything that could be invented has been invented already. There's nothing new, but Aquarian keeps putting something new out. And I remember when you guys came out with that New Orleans head, where you had like the coating that was removed from the outer ring. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, that was an interesting story. Do you want to hear that really quickly?
I would, but I do, but a bigger question to follow up with is like, how do you guys come up with ideas for new products? Is it always in-house? Is it artists that you work with that come to you with an idea, you know, and what do you get behind and how do you make those decisions?
Sure. It can be in-house. Honestly, a lot is artist driven, and the working drummer. It's driven by those two things. But it can be in-house too, but it's more things that drummers will say, hey, it's a solution to it, problems or suggestions that drummers have, but it could be just sometimes cooked up internally with no outside input, but that's not really the case. It's more input from people. Like that New Orleans special head, like the kick patch that Bart had was part of, like the Mike Johnson pad, like the super kick. Those always are outside suggestions or musings, like, hey, is it possible that you... Now, sometimes they get out of control a little bit. and we might feed into that. Hey, could you do this head in purple with the ring and a dot and this and that? And you're like, ay, ay, ay. It can get a little nutty, but most of them come from suggestions.
So what's the story about the New Orleans head?
Okay, well, there's a store in New Orleans called Ray Franson's Drum Center. And he was supposed to get a shipment of high energy heads. And when they showed up, the high energy is a large powered, our large power dot material, and the smaller power dot material on top in the center. When he got his shipment, the small dot wasn't there. And he called Roy. He said, "Hey, Roy, I got the 12 high energy heads," or whatever they were. And he said, "It's missing the dot." And Roy said, "What? Okay, we'll send you the others. The guys must have just made a mistake." And he said, "Well, I'll keep these." Ray Francis said, "I'll keep these." And a couple of 3 weeks later, he called up Roy and he said, "Hey, I sold all those. The guys love them here. Can I get some more?" And Roy said, "Sure." And so because of that, because it was, you know, New Orleans and stuff, and he kept ordering them, they decided, let's make this a thing and we'll call it the New Orleans Special. But that head just came out of a mistake.
An accident. I love it.
It was a happy accident. Yeah.
Exactly. That's awesome.
That's what, like, my mom might have been an unhappy accident. Jeremy, come on.
I didn't hear what you said. What did I say?
I said, like, Bart might have been an unhappy.
You've got to have thick skin if you're going to be on the Aquarian endorsement roster.
I've known Bart forever.
Yeah.
I've known Chip for quite a while, and Rick. Jeremy's more recent, but we've known each other too long to play it too straight.
I've played along as well as we do is because we haven't known each other for too long.
Yeah, exactly.
You
yeah.
You're picking me really quick, Jeremy. Don't worry.
We're talking decades that we've been aquarium.
Yeah, it has.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know what?
I think you were an endorser. I don't think I signed you up. I think you were an endorser before I started here. And
you know what? I was.
So I don't know. I don't remember.
I had just, you had just started.
So like around 97?
Yeah, 97, 90.
Yeah, okay.
When we moved into the new house, I had saved my, you know, welcome to Aquarian letter. And what was the guy's name that was there before you?
Benny.
Yeah. I have that letter and it's got like the handshake thing on the top of it. Aquarian and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I have it around here somewhere. And I'm going to frame it, put it up in here. I'm not sure where it got put. We got it at the new house, but yeah, I've been with Aquarian for many years.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I've just known you guys for so long. It's hard not to joke around, but we love each other. It's all in jest.
I think one of the things that people enjoy so much about tech that I hear all the time is that we do give each other a hard time and we laugh and kind of keep it lighthearted, you know? Okay. So Aquarian, let's go back in time a little bit, because a lot of times people equate Aquarian with Roy Burns. I mean, he was kind of like the spokesperson for Aquarian for many years and was the figurehead. How did everything kind of start with Aquarian? How did the head company start? It didn't start with drum heads, did it? It started with the cymbal spring. Am I correct?
It started with powder coating. So Ron Marquez. Roy was his partner. Ron was the primary owner, and he was one of the first people in California, or maybe anywhere, but in Southern California, to do powder coating of metal. And he was powder coating things for Rogers CBS. Mm-hmm. I think that he was powder coating things for the Fender Rhodes piano.
Different pieces.
And they were also talking about powder coating some things for Rogers. And so that's how that whole thing came about, is Ron was working for Fender CBS, which we're in. Well, Aquarian was originally in Anaheim. We're in Orange now, but it's not very far from Fullerton, where you used to live, Bart.
Right.
That was the headquarters of Fender. And so they could literally pop over to each facility within 5-10 minutes and have meetings, and Roy and Ron met that way. And then it eventually, Roy said, "I have to get out of here." He was talking to Ron. He says, "These bean counters here at CBS are going to ruin Fender and Rogers," which they probably did at some point. He says, I just can't do it anymore. And Ron basically said to him, "Hey, you know, I have some ideas. I'd like to start another company, another business. And the first product was the, I believe, was the cymbal spring.
Yeah.
There was no drum heads. It was accessories. Because the original name was Aquarian Accessories.
Yeah.
There was no drum heads at that point. And so the cymbal spring was the first product.
That's really cool. I remember back in the day when I first met Roy, I just moved to California, and I was walking through the NAMM show, and they had that snare head, the woven snare head
with the knife
through it.
Yeah,
and he was like, "You can't break it." And I remember playing on it, and we struck up a conversation because I just picked up a pair of sticks and I played paradiddles, and I was hitting right at the knife, and it didn't split. And that was what he you know, he's like, "Oh, I see you know how to play paradiddles," and that's how it started with us. And he was just the, you know, he was just the nicest guy in the world. And that was.
And then he said, "Can you walk and chew gum at the same time?"
He would said, "No, can you play a polka?"
He said. Then he told you, "Don't just stand there, do something."
Yeah, don't just stand there. Go do something, would you? No, he said, "Don't just." He said, "Don't just do something. Just stand there."
I think Rick has one of the early.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Felt?
That's an early cymbal spring. Yeah, felt.
It's got felt on it.
The very early one
had rubber.
Didn't have that cap. I think it had a metal loaded spring top that
was
sort of the shape of a crook, and the cymbal popped on top of this. So there was no screw on that. But that is one of the earlier ones with the felt.
Yeah. Yeah.
That actually might have some of those forgiving felts that Sticks Jenkins likes.
We got to get Sticks Jenkins on the show. That would be a hook.
That would be amazing. If you got Sticks, he's also a foodie. He does a lot of food. If you go to his channel on Instagram, he also does a lot of food reviews.
Okay.
You do food reviews too for like Snickers and stuff, right, Chris?
I can tell you all about candy.
Really satisfying.
Yeah. He didn't have his Snickers before he came on this morning. That's why he's hangry.
A little hangry.
Hey, Chris, what is powder coating?
That was a way of, I think, somehow electrostatically adhering paint powder to metal, and then it would go into an oven and bake on. And you get that nice, hard-baked, glossy paint. So back in the day, Ron's Powder Coating Company did a lot of government work, and he also manufactured some stuff maybe for Schwinn, but I know they
used
BMX bikes. They would powder coat Mongoose. Remember Mongoose? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And I believe Ron made the handlebars. They had the equipment to bend and weld the aluminum. And they made the handlebars and powder coated them.
Really? No. So they actually made the bars there. Wow, that's cool.
The handlebars. And I tripped out when I first started working here because, you know, back in the day, I did a little BMXing, as it were. Matter of fact, I might have. And I remember I had some I didn't have a Mongoose frame. I had a Stroker frame. But I think I had a Mongoose handlebars and the Red Line goosenecks and Red Line.
I remember. With the four Allen bolts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was a PK Ripper man myself.
Oh, I remember those PK Rippers. Yeah. Did you guys ever BMX, you other guys?
No.
Well, I had a Mongoose and I hated Diamondbacks.
Diamondback. Diamondback had a Mongoose chip?
I had Mongoose, Chrome Wally, and my brother had a Red Line.
Yeah, Red Line was good. I remember Diamondback.
Tough Wheel twos.
I had Tough Wheels, those synthetic ones.
Yeah.
I had some of those plastic ones.
Yeah, they were great.
So when you started there at Aquarian, and it's still kind of that way, even in the new building. Oh, there's Chris. What's he jumping? What are you jumping?
Oh, cool.
Snake Canyon.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Look at that. Look at that.
Look at that guy. Baby.
Look at that guy.
Not an ounce of fat on me. Not like today. Good Lord.
Dang, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. So one of the things that
it's like Chris Farley. I have a slight weight problem.
I like about going to aquarium, when you do walk through there, a lot of the stuff that for the heads, I mean, that make the heads. I know a lot of the stuff is no longer made there, but some of the stuff that is manufactured there, you guys make the things to actually manufacture the heads. Or the other day, you guys did put the dampener on my front bass drum head for me, and the little thing to center it and everything like that. Did a lot of that come from when Ron had the powder coating company and he was manufacturing stuff to figure out how to make the powder coating stick to metal, much less a drum head? We'll get into that.
Yeah. Well, it's not like you can open up an Acme supply book and go, yeah, we're going to make drum heads. I need one of these. Let's get this out of the catalog. You have to make all that stuff from scratch. Now you take existing things. You might take a hydraulic press of some sort, but then the molds, the male, female molds and the hydraulics, all that stuff might have to be modified or adapted or little bits made from scratch to make it work. And all those little, what you saw that putting on the felt, we have little jigs that the guys made, but that stuff was all made here.
Yeah.
By the guys that work here. Like, we have a guy here named Marco. You know Marco.
Marco's a great guy.
And he does a lot of the machining. These guys can weld. They can machine. They could drill the metal and tap it and put in a bolt and make this stuff from scratch. And it's pretty amazing because you can't, you know, like I said, you can't really get it out of a book. And you probably can't even get it online. As vast as the internet is right now, you can't, you know. We need these machines. And
so, Chris, what the heads, the aquarium heads aren't actually made in California, right?
No, we moved the production down to Mexico. I want to say, I'm just going to guess, 16 years ago, somewhere in there.
Okay. It's been a while. I remember when you guys did.
What kind of accessories do you make still in-house?
Pardon me?
But some of the accessories you still make in-house?
Yeah, we will still make some things here. Not a lot, but what Bart's talking about, we don't really make it here. He's talking about putting it on a jig and gluing the ring on, or using a hydraulic press to punch out a hole for a porthole, you know, for the front bass drum.
Yeah. I'm talking about the stuff to actually that manufactures the heads. When you watch them, not even manufacture a head, but like Chris said, maybe pop a hole in a head or put the jig in the middle of the head to center a felt muffling ring. The engineering that goes behind that aspect of making the drum head is pretty cool. You know, if you can kind of geek out on it and go, well, you don't, like you said, Chris, you can't just go buy that stuff. You have to literally, okay, how do I make this and how do I make it work?
Yeah, I mean, one of the more complicated bits of our drum heads is the actual hoop, the flesh hoop itself.
Right.
We'll call it a flesh hoop because back in the day, they would take a rectangular squared shaped piece of wood round, and then they would tuck the calf around it. They'd wet it and tuck the casket around it, tuck it in, let it dry. And that where they would tuck that animal hide around was called the flesh hoop because it was animal flesh hide. So we still kind of use that terminology, but it's an aluminum flesh hoop. But ours is extruded. So kind of think of it like, you know, the old Play-Doh toys where you put the Play-Doh in and go, and then the shape comes out the other side.
Yeah.
Well, that's how our hoop was made. We have a die and they take billets of aluminum, heat it up, and they push it through the die and pull it out the other end. So we don't just take a flat piece of aluminum stock and then bend it into a U shape. It's an actual rectangular shaped piece of aluminum that on the inside has a function to it. So that when the plastic material goes in and the resin goes in, there's a locking collar that all locks in there, one solid chunk. So you don't hear any cracking, you know, the head doesn't pull. And that allows the head to be held evenly 360 degrees around.
Yeah.
Which, again, eliminates the pulling, the unevenness, and then helps it stay in tune a lot longer. I mean, I've had guys tell me, yeah, I did a tour, and then we were home for a couple of months, and I pulled the drums out of the out of my cases, and they still were sounded great. They were still in tune from when we had them from the tour.
Yeah,
that's because of that proprietary hoop.
Yeah, before I used to play.
You can look at other drum heads that are on the market, and you can take that. You can take their heads and you can flex it. Now this is a bottom snare head, which means it's very thin. And if it was going to flex, you could flex it easier with a thin piece of Mylar.
Right.
Very, very thin. But you can tell there's hardly any twisting.
Right.
If I took another head on the market, I could take that and totally torque it and just go and just twist it like crazy.
But could you torque it?
Check this out.
Twerk it.
You couldn't twerk it?
Not at my age.
You don't want to see Chris.
I'd probably throw out my back doing that.
And talk about durability. So this head was on my snare for, from November 2018 to August 2019 and played for over 800 hours.
Wow. What snare is that?
This is a Modern Vintage 2 snare.
Wow.
Yep. And
nuts.
The only reason I took it off because I just wanted to experiment with some other heads. But this thing still sounded good, so I thought I'd have all the students sign it.
That's one of the problems about making such a good product that it lasts so long is that you don't sell as many.
No, we still, you believe me, we still like, because there's guys that are very, drummers that are very particular, and they want to change out their heads all the time, every time.
Chris, I got a question for you. What is your most popular model of drum head that Aquarian sells?
The one that's our best seller, our most popular, it's the one that people really identify. It's sort of iconic to us. Would be the Super Kick series.
Yep. I knew it.
That's the one.
Super Kick too, yeah.
Yeah, it's the one.
I remember Roy saying one time that the Super Kick was the best thing that Aquarian ever did. He was like, he was so proud of that drum head.
Well, I think the best thing that Aquarian ever did might be hiring me, but
meant what they manufactured. I think. You know, he wasn't talking about, you know.
The
crowned one. You know,
and interestingly enough, the Super Kick, we still make this head. There was a predecessor to the Super Kick called the High Impact.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not the High Impact, just the Impact bass drum. And then basically that came out first, but the felt muffle ring was wider. And when the drummers started testing it, they loved the concept, but it was a little too specific. It was too much muting. Mm-hmm. And so the word came back, oh, we love it. It's great. We don't have to have anything in the bass room, but it's just a little too much. So they just narrowed that felt ring. Instead of this wide, it became like this wide. And then that was the perfect combination. That opened it up enough where it appealed to a broader range of drummers than that. But we still offer the Impact.
Yeah, the Super Kick makes almost any kind of drum sound better.
Which is more popular, the Super Kick 1 or the Super Kick 2?
Super Kick 2.
What's the difference between the two? For people that don't know.
One's a Super Kick 1 and one's a Super Kick 2.
Oh, thanks. Perfect. I appreciate it.
Hey, lady!
This amp goes to 11.
No. The Super Kick 1 is a single ply. It's a single 10 mil piece of film. The Super Kick 2 is a 2-ply, 2 7-mil.
7 mils, okay.
And then we have the Super Kick 10,
which is
2 10-mils. Now, that's actually my favorite Super Kick. I worked here for a long time, and I always used the Super Kick 1. I never, ever used the Super Kick 2. And then we came out with the Super Kick 10. I skipped right past the Super Kick 2 and went right to the 10. That's actually my new favorite.
That's what this one is. Sorry for the. I've got to get a new foot cam, but that's what's here on this drum. It is a Super Kick 10.
I think we'd actually prefer if you just kept that photo up the whole rest of the time.
That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm just so everybody knows, my footwear today is just a pair of socks.
We don't need to see the fungus cam.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. If you guys really want, I'll just take my sock off.
Oh,
and Yeah, we can talk about.
How about we don't do that?
You sure? You sure? Yeah.
Wait. I'm curious about this. What's the most popular Tom head that you sell?
Oh, probably response to.
Yeah, interesting.
Hey, you know what? Jamie just said, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to disregard your answer, but I agree with him on this. Jamie put up that he used to like the double thin Tom heads. And I used to love the double thin. And you guys did away with that. What happened with that?
Well, it morphed into the Super 2.
It did.
The Super 2 is basically, is that Jamie Harris?
It is Jamie, yeah.
Or is it James Harrison? Is it Jamie?
James Harrison.
Not Jamie.
I thought it was Jamie. It's not. Oh, it's not James Harrison. James when Harrison. I looked up and I thought it was Jamie for a second. It's not. My apologies. But,
Yeah, it's basically the Super 2 is the double thin.
What's the difference between the Super 2 and the double thin?
Well, that's a proprietary. I can't really.
That's kind of like the pad. You can't.
He could tell you, Bart, but then you wouldn't be able to order any more Aquarian heads after that.
Oh.
Yeah,
exactly. The two plies just got reversed. We found it was a little easier to manufacture. It's the same configuration of a 5 and a 7 mil, but we've kind of flipped them.
So okay.
The double thin does still exist. It's now called the Super 2.
Okay. Hey,
Chris, you want to hear my Super 2s? Listen to this.
Those are the Super 2s with the rings, right?
Ring. Yeah. I use those. Rick and I use a lot of the same heads, the Modern Vintage 2, Super 2 with 1, Super 2 with the rings. Hey, Chris, my students ask me this all the time, and I used to think that I knew the answer, but now I've been made to make it up. I just pretend like I know, but I don't really know. You know, sometimes with the double ply heads, you get that kind of rainbow effect. Looks like a
And I think this is correct. Roy used to say this, and I think he's right. He calls it Newton's ring. It's light refraction. It's not oil. There's only one true oil-filled head, and that's an Evans hydraulic. That actually does have oil in it. Our heads, pinstripes, there's no oil in there, but air will get in there. It's hard to get the air out completely. You can't really make a true vacuum. So if there's air in there, the two plies, it's like a prismatic effect.
What did Roy call it? Newton's what?
Newton's ring. You can Google it. There's something called Newton's ring. It's light refraction.
Very cool. Now,
so like looking through a crystal and seeing all the colors, you know.
Right. It used to be back in the day when, you know, this is 100 years ago, but Roy always had the thing, take the tap test. And that is still very true. You can take an Aquarian head off of the drum and you can tap it and it has tone to it. And you, a minute ago when you showed the bottom snare head, I used to have another brand of head sitting in the studio and I would demonstrate that to students. I'd go, look, here's, and I used a used Aquarian head and a new one of the other brand.
Yeah.
And it was the used Aquarian head. Okay, listen, I've played this on a drum for X amount of time, bong, 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 and it still sounded and had a tone to it. And then you take the brand new head of the other brand and you would tap it and it was just, you know, it didn't sound
kind of papery, kind of like a wet paper bag. So,
right. How do you guys, so when you stretch it before it goes in the hoop and then it goes down in the hoop, it's glued in.
Well, it's put into a mold.
Right.
Right. Kind of like a, you know, there's a male and female. It has a shape to it. There's heat and pressure. And that's what takes the flat Mylar disc or film and then actually puts that little, the sound curve collar and the shape into it. And then it's put into, but the reason why you're here, that tap test works is goes back to the hoop design, that extruded aluminum flesh hoop, which I think I might, don't worry viewers, I'm back. I got
I saw you went. You bailed on us.
So here's You see the squared shape?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is like a cutaway. So this is what allows that because it's held so firmly and evenly. There's not a lot of waffling going on there.
Very good.
Very good.
Can you, do you guys make waffles there?
I wish.
That would be nice.
Actually, you know, I'm actually more of a pancake guy. I got, has this ever happened to you guys? There's been a couple of things when I was younger that I got sick from eating.
Yeah.
What was cotton candy? Just the look of cotton candy now
makes me
curl.
Yeah.
And the other was waffles.
Oh,
yeah. I got violently sick after eating waffles, and I can't. I love pancakes. No problem. And it's basically the same exact thing, right? There's the, but for some reason, the look and smell of a waffle, I'm just like, ugh.
No, see, look, the reason that I became a touring musician is very simple. It's because we stay in a lot of hotels all the time, and they have the waffle maker downstairs at the breakfast in the morning. But it's specifically when you go to Texas and Florida, those two states, they're very proud. And they are the only states that I've ever been to that you can make a waffle in the shape of the state. You go to Texas, you make yourself a Texas-shaped waffle. You go to Florida, you make yourself a Florida-shaped waffle. Right? You go to Colorado, well, you get a square. You go to Wyoming, you get another square. Kansas, you get a rectangle. But in Florida and Texas, you can make yourself a waffle in the shape of the state, and that's why I like to go out on tour with the band and that's play aquarium drumheads. That's
I
why
still I don't think I could eat it. I just the waffle,
dude. It's Texas. It's Florida.
That's why we couldn't have waffles here, Jeremy, because I just the look of it would.
Well, but you know what, Chris? There are other things you can do in California that you can't do in Texas and Florida. So that's it. Kind of offsets.
Like hang out with Bart.
Yeah, well, you can come with me to Florida. I don't care. Let's go. It's fun there. It's a kind of nice
San Diego. That, but that's like a 2-hour drive. It's we're not doing that.
No, we're going to come to you. We're going to do the next deck day back at the Aquarian warehouse in Orange
again. We'd love to have you. That was a lot of fun.
That was super fun. Especially my favorite part was the rotor
kit at home. What's on your drum kit at home?
What's that?
I was wondering what heads do you have on your own kit?
Oh, it's show and tell time. Here's another picture. Oh, this is from Jim Haler from Yamaha helped me out with this. He helped me find a missing drum. Well, it wasn't a missing drum. It was a piece that I wanted to complete my kit, and he helped me find it. But I have a 1983 Yamaha recording custom.
Nice.
Woo.
Nice.
Oh, baby.
And where did I just put just single ply coateds. I don't really play a whole lot anymore. I can hit solid, but I'm not pummeling.
Even with those 19-inch biceps?
Oh, he's froze.
So generous. They're actually 17. Let's go with
Bart, I heard you have 16-inch biceps, and Chris has 17-inch biceps. Oh,
this is true. This is true.
I don't even think Bart's a 16-inch biceps.
I don't. I got
half on a good day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's when
he's got those arms like your grandma, where they just kind of waggle, 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 waggle.
So you
I woke up this morning and I thought, God, I just want to, there's a bus outside. I just want to go jump under it.
Is that Chris Brady driving that bus? It
keeps backing up over me. Ka-dunk, 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 ka-dunk.
Hey, Chris, this would be a good time for us because we are getting tighter on time to talk about artist relations and getting an endorsement and, you know, what does Aquarian look for in an artist to sign up a new endorsement artist?
Oh, boy.
Present company excluded.
Yeah. or are you like, you guys are done with it? You're not.
I'm tapping out. I don't know.
Listen, we probably should have started this conversation earlier because things have changed a lot, right? I mean, the criteria for endorsements back in the day, like if you heard Roy talk about it, right? first of all, Roy said, well, he said, when I was in it in his 20s and stuff, he says, if you were playing drums, you didn't approach companies.
Right.
He says, you never would approach a company. Hey, will you, blah, blah, blah. I said, they came to you, which means you had to be a high level player in a high level situation. So for him, high level would have been, you know, back in the day, there was no Beatles or anything. And so it was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones of that day would have been Benny Goodman and Woody Herman and Lionel Hampton and all those big band guys, or the smaller bebop kind of group situations. So you had to be a Buddy or a Louie or a Max Roach, and the companies would approach these guys. They didn't, you know, they didn't call up the phone like, hey, can I get a free set of drums? Then things started to morph. You know, rock and roll came in, and that changed a lot of things. And then the number of companies, which I never really thought, Roy always said, he said, the reason why there's so many endorsers now, too, is because, he says, back in the day, what was there? You guys can maybe help me with this. How many drum companies? It would have been Ludwig, Gretsch, Slingerland,
Pearl.
Who else? What? Pearl. No, I'm talking way back in the day.
Oh, okay. Way back in the day. Ludwig Gretsch, Slingerland, Premier, Camco.
Rogers.
Camco.
But even earlier, there was no Premier and Camco. I mean, there was just probably four drum companies, one cymbal company.
Yeah.
I don't even think there was drumstick companies like we know them, right? I think the drum set companies offered drumsticks. They made them, right? Am I wrong?
Drumsticks.
Right. There you go, Chip. Yeah.
And they offered the head. A lot of them offered the heads too. Like, you know,
Ludwig made heads,
right?
Early on. And then there was basically at the very beginning, I mean, there was Evans, and he might have pioneered some stuff, but I may have my history not right, but there was basically just Remo. So there wasn't like, now there's 30 plus different cymbal companies. There's what, at least 10 different stick companies. There's four or five drum head companies. Well, all like Roy used to tell me, he says, all these companies need artists. You know, they want to have artists too. So that expanded the number of people that were getting endorsements and the number, you know, the companies needed artists to help represent. And that really just kind of snowballed it out. And then MTV. You know, when I first started here, there was no really internet like we have it now. It was still dial up. You know, we had a switch, and it was like phone and then internet. You'd switch the switch, and all of a sudden you hear that weird, horrible noise.
Yeah.
So the criteria back in the day was, well, who's your management? Send in a pack. Well, who's your management company?
Yeah.
Where's your gold records? Are you on MTV? Who do you play with? There was a whole that's all gone out the window. Mm-hmm. There's a whole different set of criteria now that you might look at that even when I started here is not pertinent or really even relevant anymore.
Is that new criteria good, or does it kind of turn it into the Wild West? I mean, right? Okay. Well,
would you say that the number of endorsements that you give out or relationships that you start is are fewer than they used to be? Now,
I try to make it fewer.
Yeah.
Just because, well, and you guys know, you've all been here. Along with artist relations, I have other, you know, responsibilities and things that need to get done, like we all do here at Accord. We all wear a lot of different hats. So I can't devote my whole day just to artist relations. And you keep bringing guys aboard. It gets to be too much. Mm-hmm. I, there's not enough time in the day for me to adequately and properly take care of everybody. So to keep bringing people aboard, I don't have the time. You know, guys forget that they're not the only one.
Right.
So, hey, can you send me a copy of the invoice? Now all of a sudden I'm the accountant because they haven't kept track of their. I got to send them hey, can you give me the tracking number? Hey, I got this thing and it's missing this. Well, if you multiply that out by hundreds,
right,
it's a lot of stuff. So it's hard. Bigger companies, they're very compartmentalized. So an artist guy for say, whatever, you know, the Zildjian or the bigger, all they primarily do is artist relations. They don't work with the export accounts. They don't work with Sweetwater and those kind of accounts. They may not be involved in the marketing, product development. They're just strictly taking care of the artists. But my role here is a little different. You know, everybody's role here is different. We do any and everything. Whatever needs to get done, we all jump in and do it. There's no, you know, there's like, hey, that's not my job. No, it's all hands on deck.
If you've been watching the show the whole time, or you go and you watch, all hands on deck. I like that.
I'm involved in marketing.
All right, exactly. If you've been watching the show live, or you're watching it on YouTube, you probably gathered that we're pretty tight here, the five of us, and we're joking around and stuff. But one thing that I've often said, and it is true, that whenever I go over to Aquarian, it's a hang. You go there and you take time with the artists and you hang out and you go grab your drum heads if the order's not ready or you didn't, you know, email in the order or call it in or whatever. And it's a thing, you know, and I don't, and Chris is right. Everybody there does pitch in and do everything. I don't think that other companies are that way. I don't, you know, and I see that would be, you know, a problem to have, like, you know, you got 20 guys that come through the door and you're going to hang out all day. You know, yeah, that's got to be.
And sometimes you might. And I've had people that get upset. I had dealers that get upset because they think I'm the dealer guy.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, I've sent you an email and I called you five times. And it's like, yeah, but I've been doing this. I've been on the phone with three or four different. I've had three visitors today.
Right.
But it's not, you know, they don't understand. Why would they know? They don't know.
I'll tell you this, Chris, as busy as you may be, every time we connect, I always feel like I'm the most important person in that moment. So I appreciate how good care you take of your artists.
Well, all kidding aside, that I may have my jerky sides of me. We all do, right? But I had great parents and they raised me right. If there's any deficiencies, it's not their fault. It's my own fault. And you laugh a little too quickly there, Bart.
I laugh because I think the same thing about myself, man. And it's like, you know, it's cool that you would say that. That's really cool.
Roy, I worked for Roy, I don't know, at least a good 20 years before he passed away. Yeah. And I observed a lot and watched how he treated people. Mm. And I also hear, you know, I hear horror stories, and some of them have been from you guys, of experiences with other companies.
Yep.
People are people. And I just would find it, I would have a hard time, you know, I don't know. I just want to treat everybody. Everybody's kind of the same, you know, and we all have our heroes. Yeah. You know, if Steve Gadd walked in here right now, I'd probably be a bumbling mess, right? Because it's like, oh man, you know, I get weird. That's something I learned from Roy. I watched how Roy treated everybody from quote unquote, you know, the most popular famous guy to just the working guy that was doing weddings and playing clubs, and he would treat them all the same. There was no differentiation with him, and I try to follow that lead.
You know, you have, and my experience is that everybody at Aquarian is competent and knowledgeable in every aspect of the business. So everybody's understanding what's going on. Nothing gets left behind. Everything is getting done. And not only are the artists given attention, but I've had a lot of students who called up Aquarian and, you know, they think they're going to get some customer service agent to talk about. And, you know, and they're on the phone with Roy Burns, one of the legends of drumming.
That used to freak people out, man, because you guys know back in the day, Bart knows.
Oh, Rick, yeah.
Bart would really know. But in the old shop, we were all in close proximity to each other. And so I could hear Roy on the phone sometimes, and people would call up. They lose their mind. They could not believe say, hello, Roy Burns Aquarian. And there'd be this silence like, what? What? The Roy Burns? I mean, he'd have to talk them off the ledge. They'd be like, okay, you know, we all put our pants on. It's right. One leg at a time. It's fine. They could not believe that Roy Burns picked up the phone and was helping them out. They could never get over that.
To put that in perspective that people could relate to, it would be like calling Vic's Firth Stick Company and Vic is on the phone.
And have Vic Firth pick up.
You know, and Vic had that degree of
Vic was a really sweetheart. He was a sweet guy.
Roy had some great stories about Vic because they did some festivals and things. That was hilarious because they were same era. They were cut from the same cloth to a degree. But it's probably like, it can't be much different from you guys. You know, when you call me up and I pick up the phone, you're like, what, this is Chris Brady?
Yeah.
I thought you had an assistant that would be taking the orders. You're actually, wow.
Every time I leave Aquarian, I go around the corner and I park the car and I take a Vicodin to chill out and I cry a little bit. And then I go about my day, you know. So
Chris, I remember one time after NAMM, at the NAMM show, after I signed with Aquarian, I sat there with Roy Burns and he talked to me for about 20 minutes telling me about drum clinics and stuff.
He was a
super cool, down to earth guy.
He did that with that was his way of the way of doing it. Plus he didn't, you know, he was a pretty amazing player, high level guy who had done a lot of stuff. What I'm saying is you're not gonna top him. So it was pretty hard for him to get starstruck because Vinny, Steve Gadd. Yeah, they were all my drum clinics when they were in their teens. Josh Lees, I used to teach him, right? You know, it's when you're at that level.
I think the thing that a lot of people, like what Chip was just saying about how Roy treated everybody with this respect. And again, this is what it is like when you go hang out at Aquarian. And he truly did want your opinion. And I remember after one time I had started writing for Classic Drummer. Remember that, Chris?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And I'd been writing for them for a while, and he was coming out with that new book series of his. And I came over to get some product. And he's, Bart, come here. And I went into his cubicle. He goes, read this for me and tell me if this makes sense to you. And it was on current session drumming. And I really did. I was like, me? You know, it made you feel good. You know, it really made, it made you feel like he trusted you enough to ask your opinion on something. And that was a very special thing. You know, I mean,
because listen, there's guys that he had a pretty good meter for who was serious and legit and who was, you know, maybe let's say a little suspect.
Which is why the Bart thing doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. How did I get past that radar? I'll never figure it out.
But he, you know, if he trusted you and he liked you, I mean, there was times where, you know, he didn't suffer fools gladly either.
Right.
And there was times where guys would come in and play. I shouldn't even say it. I'm not going to say it.
No, I've heard a couple of those stories. No, go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it.
Well, there might be times where he would duck out of the conversation more quickly than other times. If he just, you know, the worst thing guys could do would be to come in and play for Roy who weren't jazz players.
And try to play.
Instead of playing in their idiom, they'd immediately sit down and start trying to spang a lane. And I'd just be like, oh, no, stop. Just play rock because that's the thing. You're not helping yourself.
What you do.
But then it was too late. It was like, okay. And then I'd be like, hey, great seeing you. I got to go back and make a call. But
Stay in your lane.
He loved talking to drummers and, you know, he loved when all you guys would come visit. And he would sit down, and he loved to sitting down and talking to everybody and telling stories and, you know, sharing wisdom. And I was very fortunate to be around that for 20 some odd years and get to absorb it and observe and learn. And yeah, I'm grateful for that.
I think this would be a great way to a last question for you. If what was one of the best things you ever learned from Roy? What was like the one thing that you're like, that's the one thing?
You know, it had nothing to do with music or drumming necessarily. Right. It was more business related. Just things you could apply to life, which was, if you get into a situation, Chris, maybe just, if you're in mixed company or a situation that you're not normally familiar with, so just keep your mouth shut. And listen and watch and learn and observe before you jump in. Because he says, most guys want to get in there because he'd been in all these business meetings with all these corporations over the years. And they want to prove themselves, you know. I think, blah, they start talking. And next thing you know, they haven't read the room. They're not getting the vibe. And they've shot themselves. And if it's really what I learned from it, it's just, you know, because we all have egos and you want to get in there and show everybody, I know stuff. And then you start, bleh. And so I learned just to be in situations and just keep my mouth shut. And people might think, oh, this guy's a dummy. He has nothing to add. He's not said one word. But over time, Roy then trusted me. And then he and Ron would say, no, Chris, interject. Because then at some point they realized, okay, this guy's not going to blurt out something weird or make some dumb offhanded comment, you know, like I've done in this podcast.
Repeatedly.
Over and over.
I got to tell you guys, that's one thing that really stuck with me. And he sat me down. He said, you know, when we're in these meetings and stuff, just, you know, until you get your sea legs under you, just cool it. And I went, oh, okay. But that's really helped me through a lot of other things, not just this, but just being out in public. Sometimes you just sit and you read and you, oh, this guy's like this and this person, and then maybe say something, you know, and it might have more impact at that point when you do finally say something.
Right, right. Yeah. You can get a really quick sense. You'd be surprised, I think, how quick a sense you can get of people if you just listen.
Yeah.
Right.
And you learn stuff too, you know, and then you know, before you put your foot in your mouth, you might realize, oh, I was going to say something. Good thing I didn't, because what I thought I knew about this subject, I really don't. And I would have really looked like a, you know, fool. So that actually, and then, you know, I learned drum stuff too. I just don't really practice a whole lot anymore, but he showed me all kinds of, he had a really cool brush stuff. And he'd write out all these little, I still have them somewhere, all these little exercises for me. And he would just come in sometime in my little cubicle and go, hey, Chris, check this out. You might want to work on this. And he'd show me and tell me all about it. And he'd say, like one time he said, here's a lick I thought was really cool. I thought, you know, back in the day, I was really something. And I'll try to be quicker. This involved Buddy Rich. He says, they were playing at the Metropole in New York. And if I recall, there was like an upstairs and a downstairs to this club. And he says, I'm playing downstairs a little earlier. And he goes, Buddy comes in and he goes, I pull out this lick. I think it's one of my good little chops things. And I play it and I look over at Buddy and blah, blah, blah. Then after, hey, Buddy, good to see you. Oh, Roy, blah. And he says, Buddy's playing later that night. And I go up. He says, I get close right over by the floor, Tom. He goes, during the night, during one of the songs, he goes, Buddy, spit that lick out of mine back at me, note for note, and then just turned over and looked to his right, looked right at me. Didn't say a word, just kind of smiled as if to say, yeah, I caught that, Roy. And without any practice or any trouble,
right,
I spat it right back out because it was devastating, man. Roy wrote out one of those little licks, you know, that back in the day that he liked to go to, but then Buddy just kind of crushed. Yeah, I saw what you did. Here you go. It's right back. Yeah, there you go.
That's incredible. That's great.
Well, Chris, I think it's, I just want to say this before we wrap up. It's safe to say that, that Roy's legacy lives on in the work that you do and how you do it and the way that you do it.
We're trying, man. It's not just me. It's everybody here. I sure hope so, because we don't want to, we don't ever want to let that legacy down or.
Yeah. No, we appreciate you for all the great work that you do, man, and how great the care you take of us. Thank you again for coming on the show. And
yeah, thank you.
Well, we appreciate, thank you for asking me. It's my second time and I'm grateful to be back again. And listen, we the company appreciate, the company and I appreciate everything you guys do for us. You're wonderful spokesmen and advocates and ambassadors for our drumheads and the brand. And we appreciate you, you four guys.
Cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Chris, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. We also want to thank Centerstream Publishing. They're another sponsor of the show, and they've been great to us as well. So thank you to Centerstream Publishing. Thank you to Aquarian Drumheads and Roy Burns and everything that, that Aquarian has done over the years. And it's that time of day, folks. We're going to listen to, we're going to listen to Rick Stojack, play us out, baby. All come right. on, Rick. Give it to us. Give it
Nested,
to us.
Nested quintuplets.
Nested quintuplets.